You're listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF-FM in Peterborough, Canada.
Hey, kids.
I'm Batman.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's dance-off, bro. Me and you.
Hello, and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I'm your host, Dan Collins.
Hey there, this is Martin Bruda.
Chris Gill.
Hi, I'm Sam Tweedle. I could talk about Archie forever.
The biggest bane to my existence right now is Shield number 9.
They know that I would have put it under my shirt and ran off.
What are you talking about? I haven't seen any Action Comics number 1.
Gwenpool, I mean Spider-Gwen, the whole heat and stuff, this is going to be worth a few bucks. And nobody wanted it.
Yes, Dan, the Killing Joke does need to be R-rated.
I kind of like punching the walls of reality as a way to bring a character back because nobody knows what we're talking about right now.
Dark Knight Strikes Back was one of the biggest piles of dung ever, and it was what, $10 an issue?
We need to shame Sam. He is not here because he's gone to the Gem and the Holograms movie. Hey there, hi there, ho there. It's another Friday night here at Hey Kids Comics. Martin Bruda here.
Hi, I'm Sam Tweedle.
Chris Gilpin.
Hey.
All right.
Dan's not here. He's feeling ill.
Poor
He's
Dan.
Under the weather.
That's too bad. Dan and his magical beard. He's not feeling well.
Other than that, comic books.
Yeah. Hey, I'm really glad. I haven't been here for a while. And what I really feel that's it's interesting, we've had some amazing comic book adventures the last month or so. And you guys have already talked about it. So
well, not all of them. We talked about Toronto Comic Con. And we talked about Heroes... Manufactured.
Yeah. So all of our adventures.
Yeah.
And I haven't been here for it. So I feel a little lost, but I'm sure, you know, I got other things I can definitely talk
You'll
about.
You'll be fine.
I'll be fine.
You'll
I
be
just
fine.
Feel like I've missed out on a lot of potential fun, but
No.
But that's okay. That's
There's
good.
Lots.
There's lots. There's lots to talk about. So what are you guys talking about?
Comic books. What'd you guys read? Did you read anything?
I haven't read much. I've been away for a couple weeks,
yeah.
So I haven't picked up any comics in a couple weeks.
Well, we're all going to the shop tomorrow morning.
We're going to shop tomorrow morning, and there's going to be at least 2 weeks there. But
tune in next week.
Yeah. Well, one thing that's interesting, and I would like to talk about, and it all kind of stemmed from a discussion we had a couple of weeks here on the show. I think, Chris, you were with us. Do you remember when we were talking about how... I don't feel that the runs of comics are long enough anymore with runs or creative a character.
Oh, we're going to get into this.
We're going to get into this, obviously.
Yeah. All right.
All right. So we're going to get it. You remember how we were having that conversation? I said that we just aren't emotionally connected to our runs anymore. Like we seem to have a nostalgia, but we're not emotionally connected to the characters or the creators, and they can cancel a book or do whatever they want. And I'm just like, yeah, I don't. Like I said something about I wouldn't be heartbroken. You know, why 10 years ago, it's this final issue, you scream, you lose your mind.
Yeah.
And now it just isn't happening. Well, something kind of happened that stuck in my head for weeks and weeks and weeks. And last time I was at CBA, I was collecting 42 books. And as of now, I'm collecting only 20.
There you go.
I canceled 22 books from my pull list. And it was all stuff that I was realizing that mainly characters I liked. Like, okay, like one of the books that, Batgirl, which I've been buying ever since the New 52.
Yeah.
I love Batgirl. She's one of my favorite characters. I love Barbara Gordon. But I don't know what's going on in the title anymore. I don't care about the book. Like, it could get canceled tomorrow, and I wouldn't care. It'd just be, oh, thanks, that's one more book not to buy. And I realized that if I want to read a Batgirl book, I have plenty of Batgirl books I can read.
Yeah.
I'm always going to love Batgirl.
Yes.
Right? But I don't need to buy Batgirl every month to read a good Batgirl book. I got them. I own them. I have them. And I realized that there were so many titles like that I went and I just canceled 22 books. And I'm buying probably the least books in my adult life now. Yeah. And I feel fine. I don't feel... Now, granted, I did freak out and add a couple of those back.
Yeah.
Before you left the store?
No. Since then, Jughead, I've added back.
Yeah.
I decided not to give up on Jughead. Great. It's going to go up. The list will go up again. I just finished reading the first 7 issues of Shade the Changing Girl after I had a few people suggest it. Cecil Catalucci's writing it, who I didn't even know. I've read her stuff. Did a few. Do you remember Minx? Was it Jinx or Minx Comics? It was a short-lived DC imprint.
Nope.
Well, anyways, she did a few books for them. I interviewed her like 10 years ago. And she's doing Shade. I didn't even realize that. I love Cecil. So I just added Cecil's, Shade the Changing Girl, which I really like. I'm going to be buying that new Spidey book.
Yeah, yeah. Spectacular Spider-Man by, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm brain farting on this.
Yeah.
He does the weird Comic Cons outside of regular Comic Cons.
I don't know. Anyways, I'll be buying that. When the JSA book and the Legion books, I'll probably be getting those. But for now, I'm only getting 20 books a month, which makes me feel great. I went to the comic store only once since I've done this, and I think it came to like $30 when it used to come to like $80.
Yeah,
right. More. So that's the biggest news, I think, in my comic book thing is the fact that I've reduced, and it was all based on a conversation we had here that put me in that mindset. Now, I'm still getting 20 books, and the 20 books... Basically, I'm going to get, you know, me and Marty's talked about this. You know, the top of the pile books?
Yeah.
You get a book and it goes to the top pile. The 20 books I'm getting is my my 20 top of the pile books. I looked at it. What books could I not live without?
Yeah.
And those are the ones I'm getting now. And I feel really good about that. I feel like a burden's off my... And the two companies that got the majority of it, I lost the majority of my money with Marvel and DC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
getting very few Marvel and DC books now.
So that Spectacular Spider-Man is Chip Zdarsky writing?
Is it Chip?
Chip Zdarsky and Adam Kubert is going to do the art, so it's going to be pretty decent.
That is, yeah. Yeah, Chip, some of his stuff's so brilliant. I find him, he gets a little self-indulgent every now and then,
though. Well, see, when I said we're going to get into this, I assume we're going to have to get into this retailer summit that Marvel at some point.
Let's talk about that for
sure. So anybody who lives in a cave or doesn't read comic books, Marvel had a retailer summit where they actually foolishly invited a reporter into the room. So this was a marketing thing. They're talking to retailers about how to pump up numbers and stuff. And some of the things that they basically admitted to were just brutal. Mm-hmm. Like one of the things, and this is what we were talking about, is that if they label something a miniseries or a limited series, the sales are absolutely abysmal. Nobody buys it because everyone's going to wait for the trade paperback. So they've adopted a policy of never mentioning it's a limited series and never mentioning the last issue of a series.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So you're always left in the dark. You don't know.
Are we specifically talking about one company or multiple?
Oh, Marvel.
This is Marvel.
Okay, so Marvel.
This is specifically Marvel's policy. This is official policy from Marvel.
Right.
So when they release a Spectacular Spider-Man with Chip Zdarsky and Adam Kubert, there's no guarantee it's not a six-issue miniseries. And you don't know that. So... You know, Davis, a friend of ours on Facebook, he said, just ride it out and ride the story. Just get it, ride the story, which is fine. I understand that. Yeah. I get it. But then, like you said, you stop with that momentum and that passion for a particular title. You lose that. It's like, well, I don't have to really care about it because they're just going to do something different in 6 months. Or they're just going to relaunch it later. Or I don't have to, like, right now, for example, I'm reading Flash.
Yeah.
It's popular. It's not my favorite storyline. I'm kind of humming and hawing, but I've been reading Flash since the 1980s, so I still get it. Mm-hmm. Well, if DC decided to do another stop and start on Flash, I'm 99% sure I wouldn't get the new series.
Okay. I'm the different... I love Black Canary.
Yeah.
And over at DC, pretty much the only DC books I'm buying now are ones that Black Canary appears in. So I'm getting Birds of Prey, Green Arrow, Justice League of America. And I'm also, the fourth title I'm getting, four titles from DC right now. The fourth one is, Shade the Changing Girl, I guess I'm getting five, is Titans, which I've always been a big Titans fan. I can tell you right now, Birds of Prey, of course I'm going to buy it. And I'm always going to buy it, no matter who writes it. Trust me, it's been a bad book. I can tell you right now, it's probably the crappiest book I'm reading currently. But I will always buy it because
it's number 20.
Because it's... But it's number 20.
But let's say
it's not as bad as it has been.
Now, DC's a little bit of a weird case because they had the New 52 reboot in 2014, and they just did the DC Rebirth.
Yeah.
So in the past 10 years, they've had a couple of number ones. Mm-hmm. But previous to that, it wasn't really a big thing.
You had a number. What? How many number ones had been released in 2016?
106 number one issues were released by Marvel Comics in 2016.
That is insane.
So... and that came out of that retailer summit as well, is that here, what we'll do is, okay, we can get a whole bunch of marketing push and we can do a whole bunch of advertising and we can do a whole bunch of special covers on issue 25 and it doesn't really bump the needle. You don't really end up selling more issues of 25. Barely, but not much. If we cancel the book at 24, start it up again with a new number one, that number one sells like blockbuster. So this is a good thing for you as the retailer. We're making you money with this super short-sighted policy of pumping out lots of stuff on number one and expecting everybody to drop off after issue number two, and then have a few more issues, cancel it, and do it all over again. Mm-hmm. So they're front-end loading the retail space. And we were just talking about this in the kitchen. You know, U.S. Avengers had 50-plus variant covers. So for every guy that went out there and bought five or six of those variants, or heaven forbid, all 56 of them, or whatever, I can't remember what it was, because there was one for every state, and then there was one for Canada, one for UK, and a few store variants and stuff. So let's just say 56. So for every dude that went out there and bought 56 versions of U.S. Avengers, that's 49 other comic books he didn't buy that week to give them a try, give them a chance. That's 55 copies of Captain Canuck that weren't sold. America, right, the new title, Miss Marvel, and some of those other titles that are you know, diverse. Mm-hmm. So instead of having the money left over to take a chance on some of those more interesting, riskier, as far as, you know, the superhero genre titles, or investing in Image, or investing in Boom Studios, they're buying the exact same comic book 50 times over because the cover's different.
Yeah.
And Crystal, to be the first one to tell you, how many times did we find how many copies of that Amazing Spider-Man number one from the latest run just sitting there at a comic book shop?
Or from the run before
the latest run before.
I was actually just thinking about that.
Like hundreds. There was hundreds of copies of number one sitting in the store.
We were going to the Hamilton Comic Con. Yeah. We hit Big B and there was a rack full of them. And then we go to the Comic Con and Big B has another big pile of them going, holy jumpins.
Now, the retailer himself made their money by buying, you know, if you buy 100 regular issues, you get a special variant. So they bought 100 issues for $1 a piece, and then they turned around and sold that 1 in 100 variant for $200.
Right.
So it's gravy to them. It's not a big deal. But to the poor comic book guy, again, you're spending your money, your budget, your quantity, your finances on all these gimmick books, not giving you enough money left over to take a chance on something that could be really great.
That's what I'm saying, but that's why I dropped all those books.
Exactly.
Because I find that I hate when it peters out to the point that I just don't care.
Exactly.
Like, I love the characters, but I don't need to read books that I'm not going to be around long enough. Look, the Bwahaha Justice League.
Yeah.
The guys who did that, I can't think, was DeMatteis and...
DeMatteis, Giffen, and
Giffen, McGuire. Yeah. They did it for, what, 100 issues?
Not quite. I think the artist dropped off. Adam Hughes did it for a while. But yeah, basically, it was about 100 issues.
Or
you take a look at John... Chris Claremont.
On X-Men.
What was that John Cassidy Astonishing X-Men? Who wrote that? Was it Bendis? Wayne.
No,
Josh Whedon.
Josh Whedon did, yeah.
You know, same thing. Ran for 30-some-odd issues, and it was interesting.
Or Marv Wolfman on New Teen Titans.
Exactly.
I mean, you look at these, and why are these... or Frank Miller on Daredevil. Why are these runs so legendary? Because they put enough time into the writing, like 60, 70, 80 issues, that they could really build a world.
Yeah, exactly.
And you could understand these characters on more than...
And you
than
got emotionally attached to the to the world, not just the costume.
Exactly. And you can't do that in 7 issues or 14 issues. You can't do it.
A great example, it's in the television realm, but it's Cheers, right? Cheers was like a number one TV show for quite a few years. But the first 3 years, it was at the bottom of the pile because it was up against, I can't remember what it was, the Cosby Show or something like that.
No, it was after Cosby.
There was something...
Cosby was on at 8, different, and then Cheers was on at 9, so they were on the same night.
Yeah, there was some TV show.
Now Cheers is always on, and you'll never see the Cosby Show
Back to my story.
It'll never be on again.
The point is that for the first 3 years, it didn't really find its audience. Then something changed, something shifted, and all of a sudden all these people are tuning into Cheers and going, this is a fantastic show, and it's the number one show for the next 7. Mm. Right? And nowadays, when they release a TV show, if you don't hit the numbers the first 3 episodes, they'll cancel you right out.
Yeah.
And the same thing is happening with the comic books. What were the sales on number one? Well, that's not enough. We're not going to put the effort into it. Let's see what we can do about rebooting this series. You know, and I know Marvelites hate the term reboot the series. Like,
oh, Marvel never reboots.
They never,
no, never reboot. Never, ever.
One More Day.
They just renumber.
Yeah,
One More Day was actually brilliant. I loved One More Day.
How can you love a...
I loved One More Day. I loved it. You know why? This is why. Because what happened is Spider-Man had gone to a certain point. I like to explain it in relevance of Billy Joel. Okay? Bear with me here.
Okay.
So I
went with Cheers. I'm going to let you go with Billy Joel.
So Spider-Man... Okay, so when Billy Joel first showed up on the music scene, all right, he was this young, angry New York guy, bitter, and he wrote songs about the streets. He wrote songs about people who were poor and struggling, and he was kind of gritty, and his songs were really great. Then he
started listening to Bill Cosby comedy albums.
Then what happened is, I didn't interrupt you on your Cheers. Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Yes, you did.
Okay. I did. I had that coming. All right. All right. So anyways.
Oh, boy.
What happened was he gets famous. He gets rich. He marries Christie Brinkley. And he's not angry anymore. So he's running stuff like Uptown Girl.
Yeah.
That dirty, gritty Billy Joel we all fell in love with, he kind of mellowed out. You know what I mean? And we didn't recognize him. Same with the thing with Spider-Man. Spider-Man was this kid who had problems. He was broke. He couldn't get the girl. Aunt May's about to die all the time.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he was like a school teacher, and he was living in a penthouse apartment. He was married to a supermodel, and Aunt May was dead anyway, so he didn't need to worry about that. And it was like, I didn't recognize this Spider-Man. I didn't recognize him. And I've always been a longtime spider collector, so I stopped collecting it for a few years. And then they did One More Day, and all of a sudden that Spider-Man that I fell in love with, that Spider-Man I recognized, it was like, oh my God, it's back.
Yeah.
He's back. He has issues. Everything's fine. Now, what's going on, for the second time since I've been collecting comics, I'm not collecting Spider-Man again.
Right.
Because, again, when they did the reboot of Spider-Man, where he was...
Tony Stark,
I didn't recognize that Spider-Man. And like, now
Is he still in Japan?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
Because I dropped it.
But now that's why I'm going to be buying the new Spider-Man, because, again, he's... I'm sorry. You can write the new stories, but I'm sorry. I want the formula. I want Spider-Man in New York having issues. Why? Because I can relate to that guy.
Yeah.
That's why I love Spider-Man, because guess what? I'm the guy who's always broke, always in and out of jobs, always in and out of girls, has all these problems, and it did come out a little wrong, didn't it? That's not what I meant.
But, I mean, the same thing...
But that's why I love Peter Parker. I want to recognize that character.
So, I mean, like, Marvel can say no reboots, but that was a reboot.
Yeah.
But it happened all in continuity. Well, everything that DC did is in continuity too. They just had these weird MacGuffins like Crisis on Infinite Earths and Flashpoint that caused that situation to happen. But they did the same thing. Mm-hmm. So you were talking about no idea what you were talking about.
Spectacular Spider-Man is apparently in continuity.
Spectacular Spider-Man is apparently in continuity, but like the picture is him with a big mustard stain on his shirt. So obviously
I get mustard stains returning all the time.
They're returning him back.
So at the same time, it's amazing. So
the thing is that Amazing Spider-Man is going to be
renumbered/rebooted/
Make Mine Marvel return to
originals
numbering and returning to the original characters. So this might be a prelude to that.
So no more Tony Stark Spider-Man.
No,
they haven't said officially
that's what's
yet.
Gonna okay. get me. Well, let's talk about the whole diversity issue.
Well, hold on, because the one thing that I did read this week was the Superman issue.
Yeah.
And you were saying, you know, this is the Spider-Man you're familiar with. This is the Spider-Man you grew up with and you're happy with. I'm reading this Superman issue and Batman comes to talk to Superman about his kid and how, you know, all this stuff.
Brilliant panel.
So, spoilers.
They're
in the barn and Batman's like, we need to talk. Right? You know, in his Batman Kevin Conroy voice. And Lois Lane goes, I'm sorry, this isn't Gotham. We talk in the house. So they go into the farmhouse and there's pie and tea and cake. And you know, Superman's eating apple pie and Batman's sitting there looking all grumpy and Lois is like serving stuff. And Damian leans over to Superboy and like Robin leans over to Superboy and goes, Batman doesn't eat pie. And I'm just like Superman, right? American, red, white, and blue, eating apple pie on the farm, at the table, Pa Kent, and Lois Lane, and Batman being grumpy, and like, every single part of that panel, it's just a goofball throwaway panel, but every single part of that panel is like, that is Superman. That is Batman. That's who they are. But that's how they behave.
What I don't understand, though, is why Batman wouldn't eat pie. Pie's awesome. I love pie.
Well, it's fattening.
He goes home and eats pie with Alfred.
He probably
eats Alfred's pie.
He probably eats kale and quinoa quiche. Or
only evil people eat that.
Anyway.
So, yeah, the diversity discussion. Like, again, at this retailer summit, Marvel is saying, hey, look, we released a whole bunch of diverse comics. Miss Marvel features a young lady from Afghanistan. America is a Latino gal who happens to be a lesbian. They had Spider-Woman. Captain Marvel is now the old Miss Marvel, so mm-hmm. she's a female. Amadeus Cho is the Hulk, so an Asian character is the Hulk. And they're not selling. So diversity doesn't work. I'm sorry, that's not the problem. The problem is that diversity doesn't work. America is a fantastic comic. Miss Marvel's a fantastic comic.
Yeah.
They're great so comics. Good. Nobody's buying them because you guys are spending too much money on variants and stuff. Then something like the Hulk, it's like, okay, the Hulk is a very iconic character. You can't just change the Hulk without having a good story reason behind it. And they didn't with Amadeus Cho.
My problem, if I risk being a little controversial here, is, and as you guys know,
turn off his mic.
I love my female characters. I love Miss Marvel, and I love Hawkeye, and I love, and diversity does not bother me. But what it seemed to happen in this last time Marvel tried it, it was felt to me that they were jamming it down my throat.
Oh, very forced.
Like they were just jamming diversity down my throat. It wasn't natural. The thing. Like it was like, we're going to be diverse because we don't want it to be all white men. So we're going to make there's going to be no white man characters anymore at Marvel.
But that's the thing. If they left the core characters alone, if they left Captain America alone, Spider-Man alone, Hulk, the core Iceman. Guys, mm-hmm. right? Then nobody would have a problem with the other tertiary characters like Miss Marvel or America.
Well, look at me. We've had this discussion, but why am I not going to the new Spider-Man movie?
I have no idea. Why aren't you going
because
to the new
Spider-Man? Because I want a Miles Morales film. Oh, because I love Miles. Where he's one of my favorites. I have no problem with a black Spider-Man. But if you had just was like, you know what? We're not going to do a Peter Parker Spider-Man anymore and just Miles Morales, but we're going to get rid of Peter Parker. I might have some problems with that.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Because I love my Peter Parker. My problem with the new Spider-Man movie, it's literally Miles' world. And they've just decided, they're basically doing a Miles Morales film, just starring a white guy.
I don't think so.
I don't think. I. It's his world. It's his plot. It's his supporting characters.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see. That's just like every single Robin on TV is Dick Grayson. Huh. Even if he's wearing Tim Drake's costume or Damian's costume, it's.
Well, my point is that I love my diverse characters, but it just felt Marvel really jammed it down our throat and then didn't give enough time to see how it all came out in the wash by saying diversity doesn't work.
Yeah,
and it's like, well, but wait, I actually like some of these characters you've jammed down my throat.
Exactly, like that's the problem is they went too far, too big.
Yeah.
And again, with all these marketing pushes and stuff, they're not letting those titles find an audience organically. Mm-hmm. So they basically said, well, it didn't work, so we're throwing the project out and we're going back to basics and everything's getting changed back. Well, you don't have to change everything back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm one to complain right away about all this stuff, but one of my books I like right now is Champions. And it's got almost every single one of those diverse characters on the team. Yeah. Right?
Like,
and I like it. It's funny. It's different.
Mighty Thor, right? Mm-hmm. Jane Foster happens to be the Thor character.
Great stuff.
It's a fantastic book. Yeah. It's great. And the thing is that if the story is good and the art is good, people won't have a problem.
I'm crazy right
if
now.
If your story is cheap and it feels like a gimmick, like remember when Green Arrow became a homosexual, not sorry, Green Arrow, Green Lantern from Earth 2 became homosexual. And it was like, hey, look, I'm gay. Here's a wedding. Oh, my partner got shot. And then they didn't talk about it again for issues.
That was cheap.
That was just a cheap crass. It had nothing to do with the character. It didn't add any value to the character.
I always thought
even touch it again.
What I always thought they should have done is right around that time the film Beginners came out with the guy from a Canadian actor from The Sound of Music, Christopher Plummer.
Okay.
Christopher Plummer did a film where he won an Oscar.
Why did I say a TV show?
No, it was a film.
Okay.
And he won an Oscar for playing a man in his 80s who just came out.
What was
and
that with Ewan McGregor?
That's right. It was a great film. I always felt they should have done something like that where Alan Scott was like, guess what, everybody? I'm gay. I couldn't say I was gay in the 40s, but now I can.
Well, exactly.
And dealing with his kids, because he has a son who's gay, Obsidian, and Jade, and dealing with the way that the Justice Society would deal with this, his friends, his kids. That's the kind of story that would have won awards.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stories that would have made headlines.
Good storytelling will trump everything.
Yeah.
Like, if they had made that relevant and important to the character, like, they could have mined that plot line that you just said for
it would have been
issues
amazing.
And issues and issues.
I would have accepted our Alan Scott, the one that we grew up on, as being gay more than I could accept this poser, who exactly. wasn't even Alan Scott. Yeah. That's
like,
yeah,
it's just like food. If it tastes like crap, people won't buy it.
Yeah.
If it reads like garbage and it seems forced and it seems artificial mm-hmm. and it seems staged and it seems like a marketing stunt, we're not stupid. We see through that crap.
Yeah.
And that's why the titles are doing poorly. Titles aren't doing poorly because Thor's a girl. That title's doing great.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just like you said, it all seems forced, mm-hmm. staged, and shoved down your throat.
I'm only buying 4 Marvel books currently. Now that I've canceled all my stuff. And one of the ones I'm really enjoying is the new Wasp book.
Yeah.
And I love the Wasp because she's funny and she's optimistic and she's going around collecting all these other female scientific minds.
And I feel like you're the only person reading it.
I probably am, but I adore the character. I love the character, and it's one of the 4 Marvel books I'm currently buying.
Because I can't buy the Wasp. I got 14 variants to buy. I can't read them.
Yeah. My favorite book at Marvel right now, which I'm convinced is a miniseries after this, is the new Kingpin book.
Yeah,
it's brilliant. It's so good.
Well,
but
one of my disappointments was Unworthy Thor.
Oh, I didn't even take a look at it.
I didn't mind it. I thought it was all right.
I liked the story, but then it was over.
Well, yeah, right? Because it's a miniseries.
Right? And then really, it
How
just...
How many issues was it?
Six or eight. I can't remember. Six.
When no, I five. Closed that last Six. Issue, nothing had changed.
Yep.
And I said, okay, this was one big prelude to the new Ultimate Thor.
Yeah.
That's all this thing was.
It was just a marketing stunt to set up the next miniseries.
Ugh.
Thor's still unworthy. Like we now know why, but like that's it.
They could have told that story in continuity with Mighty Thor. So wrap up the Jane Foster thread, tell this story in the same comic book, and then introduce the status going forward. Like, that's the other thing is, if 100,000 copies of Avengers sell, right, and that's how many people have a budget to buy Avengers, and then you release Uncanny Avengers, U.S. Avengers, Ultimates, what was the other ones? There's like a ton of Secret Avengers, the Illuminati. That 100,000 copies that you used to sell of Avengers, well, that gets split amongst those 5 titles. Because, like, I love Superman. I'm not buying Superman and Action and Superwoman and Superboy and Supergirl and Super Sons. I have to pick and choose what I can read.
Which ones are you buying?
Superman and Super Sons.
Okay.
So... you know, I have to pick and choose. I can't buy them all. How many X-Men books, like, the X-Men are coming back, right?
Yeah.
After a forced hiatus due to marketing and the movies and stuff. So right away it's like, okay, well, we're going to release this X-Men Prime special. It's going to set up the new universe. It's going to lead into the 2 new books. Cool. X-Men Gold, X-Men Blue. Turns out X-Men Gold, X-Men Blue come out every 2 weeks. So it's twice a month. So that's 4 comics you're buying, not 2. Which... I have some mixed feelings about it because from a reading point of view, I'm enjoying that. I'd rather read 2 issues of Superman a month than an issue of Superman and an issue of Action. I'd rather have that continuing story.
Yeah, remember, Marvel doesn't do biweekly.
Though. Yeah, and that's the thing. Marvel doesn't do biweekly. So even though here's a couple of biweekly books. And then, okay, great. But now there's Astonishing X-Men. There's Weapon Iceman. X. There's Jean Grey. There's Weapon X. There's X-Factor still, I think. I have a list. It's 8 or 9 X-Men books are coming out. I'm like, you're just chopping your head off again. Yeah. Pour all your effort into X-Men Gold, X-Men Blue. Make them the best books they can be. Drive your X-Men customers to those 2 books, and you're going to build a loyal following. You're going to have the numbers, and those books are going to be successful. Why have 5 mediocre selling books when you can have 2 blockbusters?
Sure. That's good logic. I like that. It's true. It's absolutely true.
And they're doing the whole they're doing the whole Wolverine thing again. They've got Old Man Logan in three of those titles.
Yeah.
At least three of those titles.
Yeah, he's in Gold, and he's in X-Force, and he's in Astonishing.
And Weapon X.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Not X-Force, Weapon X.
So he's in three of them.
Like, does he not have his own book anymore?
And he has his own book.
He has his own book.
So there's four.
Yeah.
And there's all new Wolverine with X-23 as his substitute.
Right.
So, again, like, Deadpool. I wrote it down. I don't even want to bother looking
this
it up.
Was insane.
The number of Deadpool comics that were released in 2015 and 2016 is just insane. Yeah. And at the retailer summit, they said that their number one selling trade paperback over the past 3, 4, or 5 years, I can't remember exactly what they said, is Deadpool Defeats the Marvel Universe. So because that trade paperback is like the best-selling book that they have in bookstores, you know, the New York Times bestseller list doesn't do graphic novels anymore, but it's always on the top and stuff like this. So they're trying to catch that lightning in a bottle again by just throwing every single Deadpool a concept that they can at you, steady, fast, multiple books at a time, so that any Deadpool fan, like Chris Ellis will tell you, he doesn't get them all.
You know how many Deadpool books I've bought in my lifetime?
No.
Not a single one. I have never bought... I've bought Gwenpool, which I enjoyed. Yeah. And then I bought
Then you bought a Deadpool book.
But it's not Deadpool. It has nothing to do with Deadpool.
Sure does. It's Gwenpool.
I'm going to sneeze.
Okay. Gotcha.
Sure it is. It's Gwenpool. It's literally in her name.
But Deadpool, my point is that I've never bought a Deadpool book. And I'm not about to.
Even if you did...
It wouldn't matter.
Wouldn't it make sense to buy a Deadpool book? Not like you get Spider-Man versus Deadpool and it's like, oh, okay. And then you'd switch to the Deadpool book and it's nothing even remotely similar, you know? I don't know. It's just, they should just concentrate more on putting out great runs with fewer series rather than flood the market and try to choke everything out. Because it's not working. Their numbers have been dropping since November, steadily.
Bring back the Fantastic Four.
Well, that's the thing. But as I said, I just dropped a ton of Marvel books. I'm only getting four. And I can't even tell you what those four are. Kingpin, Wasp, and some other random ones that I don't remember.
Like, the honeymoon's a little bit over for DC Rebirth. DC Rebirth kind of fired everything back up and got everybody's creative juices. But I've since dropped Nightwing, and I've dropped a few other books. But some of the other ones I'm reading are just dang solid.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Green Arrow is great month after month.
Which one?
Or week after week.
Green Arrows?
Green Arrow.
Oh, Green Arrow. Yeah, I was thinking Green Lantern.
No, Green Arrow.
I'm really
fantastic.
Digging both Green Lantern books, and I dig the Green Arrow book. Yeah. I wish the art was a little bit different in the Green Arrow book.
I agree. But the story is great.
It's not that it's horrible art. I just would
the
like
current the current storyline with connecting like how Roy Harper and Oliver Queen work in the new universe.
Okay, you didn't read the latest issue?
No, I haven't.
I took a quick glimpse at the latest issue. I haven't read it, but there's a scene. You know how it's time shifting?
Yeah.
So it's like when Speedy and Green Arrow first met. And then interspliced is that is the current adventure, and they're like making ties back and forth. Well, at one point in time, the new version of Speedy Arsenal, or whatever the heck he wants to call his name now, Roy Harper, he gives Green Arrow heck for having goggles in the old costume while he's wearing goggles in the new costume. And I was like, does the writer not make notes with the artist? Do you not like what?
Yeah.
What? Like, continuity error, what? I was just like, you guys, what? That's a gaffe. But anyways, I mean, it's fine. It is what it is. Marvel's going to do whatever Marvel does, and there's going to be a legion of fans out there that say that Marvel can't do no wrong, and Marvel doesn't double ship books, even though 22 issues of Amazing Spider-Man came out in the first 12 months.
Hey.
22 issues. I know that's not exactly 24, and there were some of those 0.1 issues in there. But the first issue was $7.99. The second, you know, there's an issue in there that was $4.99. There's an issue in there that's $5.99. Issue 25 was $9.99. So how is that not double dipping and taking extra money out of your pocket?
I stopped reading that. You know. I was going to ask you something. Something. Now, I got a little confused. You know how the internet puts all of these fake articles up around it? April Fool's.
Oh, I hate April Fool's Day for that.
Yeah. And then, so they just add more fake news to the current fake news. I saw something, and it confirmed this. I saw something about a Black Lightning TV series.
Yes.
Is that really going to happen?
There's
going to
be
awesome.
A Black Lightning TV
series. And I saw the picture of Black Lightning, and it looks great.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those CW series. So they're so talking about Black Lightning.
In continuity of the Arrowverse or whatever.
Yeah.
I have not heard whether it's in continuity with the Arrowverse or in continuity with the Supergirl universe.
Okay, well, I'll tell you. Because
they're slightly separated.
I just finished reading, I picked up the Black Lightning trade paperback, Tony Isabella.
Yeah.
And I, for the original Black Lightning books. And there was a couple from final stories that were in that canceled comic, Cavalcade or whatever. Great series. It was really a one of those gems 1970s short run series. Fantastic. Yep. And I've always liked the character, but
he's no Black Vulcan.
Better. Why didn't they put Black Lightning in the Super Friends instead?
Because in the Super Friends cartoon, instead of introducing Black Lightning, there was a little bit of an ownership debate with Tony Isabella.
So they just
released a character called Black Vulcan.
But he had the same powers as Black Lightning.
Same powers, same character, just slightly different costume that somebody drew on the animation cell real quick. But yeah, he's... Black Vulcan is indeed Black Lightning.
Black Lightning is such a great character, and he's a teacher. It's basically like Sidney Poitier with superpowers. That's what he is, and he's a high school teacher.
Was he like the president at some point in time? I don't think so.
He was in government somewhere. Yeah. Yes, he was. But basically, in this, he's a high school teacher in an inner city school, and he's enriching minds and fighting mobsters, and it was such good stuff, and I really hope they follow that original 70s formula for the TV series.
And it was so much better than Karate Kid. Oh,
yeah, it certainly was.
Like that Black Lightning series and Karate Kid kind of kicked off my entire whole let's recollect some Bronze Age comics that I wasn't reading, and I was so excited to get that Karate Kid and the Black Lightning together, and then when I read Karate Kid, it was so awful, so horribly 70s cliche written. It was just garbage, and I was looking at the Black Lightning going, oh, this is going to be the same. Like, I just can't do it, and I taped them shut, and I put them away. But I did buy the trade paperback, so I'm going to
read it. The thing about Black Lightning is you can read it now, and it's held up. Like, it looks, it was written in the 70s, but it could have been written 2 years ago.
Like, so you could definitely blame Karate Kid for me not reading it.
Black Lightning's fantastic.
And we're not talking about Daniel Miyagi, wax on, wax off. This was from the Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah. Because they were trying to find a character to go up against the Marvel character. Marvel had a really great martial arts line at that time, and DC was like, we need a martial arts line.
Kung Fu Fighter. Do you remember that one from the 70s?
No.
That was a DC comic.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. I can't remember how many issues it lasted, but I think I just finished that a couple of years ago.
Okay.
It was not great.
It was not great.
It was no, was it Shang-Chi, Master of Kung Fu from Marvel? Yeah. That was an epic comic book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was epic.
Oh.
But we'll see how it goes. I mean, you know, it's... Somebody else just got announced as a TV series.
Justice Detroit?
No. Oh, that's too bad. Marvel.
New Warriors.
Squirrel Girl. Squirrel Girl is going to be the lead of a New Warriors TV show.
Wow.
TV show based on the New Warriors, but Squirrel Girl's going to be the lead.
I love Squirrel Girl.
Is that because both or each individual title couldn't carry its own TV show?
I don't know. The New Warriors was big for a little while there in the 80s, right? Speedball and Night Thrasher and all those guys and Namorita. But I didn't read it.
Cause Squirrel Girl has nothing to do with the New Warriors.
No, so that's why I'm thinking it's going to be a little bit more comedic.
Yeah.
A little bit more funny.
Yeah. Because they're working on New Mutants too, right?
Yeah.
TV show.
There's going to be a New Mutants TV show. There's supposed to be an X-Men TV show. It's like Marvel looked at DC with all their success with the Arrowverse and stuff. And they're like, well, let's see what we can do.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm sorry, but I'm trying to get through Legion. I'm so confused. What was her name? Aubrey.
I know.
She's like a psychiatrist now, but she's dancing in black fishnets and a leotard. Yeah. And I'm just like, wait, what?
It's Plaza. Aubrey Plaza.
Yeah, see,
Aubrey
here's Plaza, the thing. Now,
but that's not who you think it is.
I don't know.
Oh, I'm so confused.
I don't know anything about Legion, the TV series. I know that one of my favorite actors, David Selby, is in it.
Like,
so I'd love to see it, but what book's it based on?
It's based on, like, Legion is Charles Xavier's son.
Yeah. David Hilliard.
Oh, that's a series I don't care about.
It's really, like, it's beautiful. Like, so the cinematography and the costuming, and it's gorgeous. It's like, what's the guy who did that, Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou and the Darjeeling Tea Company. Yeah. Wes Anderson. Yeah, Wes Anderson. It looks like a Wes Anderson production. Mm. Like, it's got that kind of sensibility as far as costuming goes and the color scheme and stuff. Oh my gosh, is it trippy. The guy from Flight of the Conchords is in some kind of treehouse in the middle of like Nth Space or something playing records in a white leisure suit. And I'm like, what are you doing?
Okay, but what? Okay, because it can't be spoilers now because it's been on for so long.
Yeah.
Is, in my opinion, I don't think it's been completely confirmed, but I mean, David is a very powerful mutant. He has multiple personalities, and each personality has their own mutant power. And when that personality comes forward, that's the power he has. We haven't got there in the show yet.
Yeah.
But the show itself, in my opinion, every single thing we've seen has taken place in David's mind.
Oh, yeah.
Every character is all of his multiple personalities battling for control of him, and including the Shadow King, which is a huge villain for Xavier. Mm-hmm. He was one of the original villains for Xavier. And Aubrey Plaza's character is just a more pleasing to the eye version of the Shadow King.
Yeah.
I mean, she is the Shadow King, but she is much better looking then because he's like this big blobby guy with a... when he shows his true self.
Now, that might be my problem, is because I don't have the background on the X-Men history.
Yeah, like...
I didn't even know.
But it is super trippy, a show. Oh, like, yeah. It's just out there. But...
I keep trying, too. Like, I've got them on the PVR, and I started watching an episode today, and she's dancing in this James Bond...
she's walking down the hall.
And I'm just like, what? What?
I may or may not have rewound that a few times and watched
it. I'm what?
I started watching the new Anne of Green Gables TV series.
Oh, don't even. Oh. For seven years, we were stuck out in the country with a busted TV antenna, and all I got was checks. And all there was on a Sunday night to watch was that stupid Anne of Green Gables. I was sick and tired of that. I watched the heck out of the W5 and the Nature of Things, but there's no way you're going to get me to watch
it. I didn't say you should be watching Anne of Green Gables. I'm saying that's what I started watching.
Couldn't do it.
I like it. It's a lot darker.
As much as I like Megan Follows.
It's a lot darker. And they're kind of going their backstory, and they're rewriting some of the stuff.
They have, like, switchblades and stuff. And...
No switchblades, but the Morphins did try to get Anne to eat a mouse, a live mouse. Oh, well, so, yeah. Yeah.
But I think if you realize that with Legion, it is very trippy, very... And you have David fighting for control of himself against the Shadow King. It was super powerful.
Now, my other problem also is that I'm a little bit of an inattentive TV viewer nowadays.
You have to follow.
I have like my phone, and I'm talking to you on Facebook and stuff while watching TV. And the wife is like, "Are you even watching this?" I'm like, "Yes, I'm watching this. I'm following along." So I've learned now to make a comment once in a while, just so she knows that I'm following the plot.
Oh wow! Oh cool!
Yeah. Oh cool! But I have them on the PVR, and I think I'm gonna have to sit down and rewatch them, binge watch them, or something.
I think that's a good idea. And if you go at it from that point of view, it does change the series.
Because I don't dislike the show. Don't get me wrong. I don't dislike it.
There's lots of characters. Lost. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to ask, and I don't know if you guys know who David Selby is. I love David Selby. He's one of my favorites. And he's on the series now. So that's kind of what made me want.
Who is David Selby?
David Selby played Quentin Collins, the werewolf, on Dark Shadows.
Huh?
Dark Shadows. You know what that is?
Yeah, but...
And Quentin Collins with the werewolf on Dark Shadows, played by David Selby.
What character was he playing?
I don't know what he's played. That's what I was going to ask you guys.
He's not the... I know.
He's in his 70s now. He's like an older man.
Yeah, I don't think I've run into him yet. If he's in his 70s, I don't think I've run into him. I think there's three or four episodes I haven't watched yet.
Because that is what made me... I don't even know what Legion is. You guys have just given me a refresher.
I think it's probably binge worthy. Like when it comes out all at once, you can catch it.
Because you guys, I was wondering about it. I knew it was based on a comic. I didn't know it was an X-Men-y thing.
Yeah,
I've never heard of this character. That's the son of Charles Xavier. He was in one of the movies, right?
Yeah, in the movie they didn't make him a son of Xavier. They made him one of the first mutants that Xavier was teaching, and it went wrong.
Okay,
but he was in the wheelchair and he had that.
Yeah, I kind of remember heavy mental powers. I sort of remember that. Yeah.
So it's an interesting show, but there's a whole slew of new shows coming, and I mean, we're watching Legends of Tomorrow, and even though they take massive, massive liberties with the continuity, it's still one of my favorite.
Number one rule is don't change the time.
I only watched the first season, but I enjoyed it.
Whatever you do,
I enjoy
don't
it.
Interact with yourself. And then they're standing there on the bridge, like the whole crew is talking to the entire crew from the past. And it's
I enjoyed the first season. I'm looking forward to seeing the second season once it's done. I'm gonna either download it or buy it. Or whatever.
I can just see Spock sitting there and going, timeline,
logical.
Logical, the Force timeline. Mm-hmm. Anyways, lots of TV stuff. They released sales numbers for March, and again, it's your typical, exactly what you'd expect to see. Amazing Spider-Man 25 was the number one comic book, but it was $9.99, and it had a bunch of variant covers and stuff. So a lot of people bought it just for the spectacle. Dark Knight number 3, The Master Race. Oh, why am I buying this comic?
I'm not buying
it. I have no idea. It's been.
Do you remember Dark Knight number 2? Like Dark Knight.
Oh, this one's horrible.
Oh, of course it is.
I should correct myself. I don't even know if it's horrible because every time I get an issue, all I do is I pull the mini comic out and pull the glue out and put the mini comic back in so the glue doesn't deteriorate the pages.
Oh.
and I put it in Mylar and I go, I'll get the trade later. Like, I don't know why I'm getting this.
For me, I don't know why. There was a long break, right?
Yeah.
And now we're 2 issues back in again. It's better for some reason, and I don't know why.
I think I just need to sit down and read it all at once because it's just I don't know. But it got number 2 spot because it's $5.99. Then it's Batman 18, Batman 19. No surprise there. Iron Fist number 1 got in 5th place. A lot of people trying it out. I'm sure it's because of the TV show and stuff. But it's a good comic. I read it and it's really good. Ed Bryson is writing it. He's a Canadian boy. I'm not as in love with the character. I don't have the long history with the character. So I even though it was a good book, I'm not bumping something else to get it. But if I had a free spot, I'd probably get it. X-Men Prime number 1 was a special that kind of fires off the whole X-Men universe. $4.99 for that. And it was good, but it was a throwaway issue. It was just one of those, okay, well, here's the team. We're going to, this is where, blah, blah, blah. And the X-Mansion is now in Central Park and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, the X-Mansion is in Central Park.
Don't you need a permit for that?
Yeah, issue 1.
Did you guys read Die Kitty Die number 2?
That's not on the list here. We're only halfway down the list.
I thought we were done the list.
No.
You hit 5 books there, didn't you?
Star Wars 29.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry.
Die Kitty Die number 2.
All-Star Batman number 8. Walking Dead 165 and Justice League 16. So if you look at it, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Batman comics in the top 10. And only 2 Marvels, 3 Marvels. If you take out the number 1s, then the list looks even more abysmal. I don't see anything else in here. I don't see Die Kitty Die in that list.
Okay, well, let's talk about that anyway.
Okay.
Die Kitty Die, Hollywood Abyss, number 2. Did you read it?
I did.
Did you like it?
I did.
Okay, did you read it?
See, now I'm missing something again. I'm still reading the first series.
Yeah.
Am I not?
Oh.
I'm on issue 4 of...
The first series is issues 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah.
And it got released to the Kickstarters digitally. Yeah. Then it got into a trade paperback. Then it got reprinted by Chapter House. So you are probably reading issue 4 of the Chapter House first volume.
Right.
Yeah.
We've read that already.
Yeah. Oh. So we're now into...
And because we're Kickstarter supporters, we've gotten the digital version of issue 1 of the second series and issue 2 of the second series.
Now, one thing that I really loved about the first series is Dan Parent has a love of Harvey characters. And there's a lot of Harvey parodies.
Oh, wait. No, I didn't read it yet.
Okay. So there's a lot of parodies of Harvey characters. Maximilians, Dippy the Dead.
But the Carnies are in it.
The Carnies are in it. But who they've re... They made these two characters made they made a cameo in the wedding scene in Die Kitty Die number 4, but now they've done that universe versions of 2 more Harvey characters, Little Dot and Little Lotta, are now being released as Lotta Little and Little Octagon.
Oh.
And another thing that really I'm
Little Lot Octagon. Sorry, I just got that.
Little Octagon instead of Little Dot. Yeah,
instead of Little Dot. Oh my gosh!
But one thing that was really exciting to me, and I'm really looking forward to asking Dan about this. There's a really obscure Archie character that was used only a few times as a sight gag back in the 60s, and it was a character at Riverdale named Ida. And she also, I think, was in a couple of, like, throwaway gags in Sabrina the Teenage Witch. And basically, she was just a teenage girl whose head was just a giant eye.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, think about, like, wasn't there, like, a Marvel villain like that?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, literally his teenage daughter, okay?
Right.
And they've brought Ida into this universe. And that's basically an Archie character. I don't know if she slipped into public domain or
she's in Daikini,
what they've Daikini. Done. But yeah, they've taken this gag character from the 50s or early 60s and somehow have dropped her into this universe. And it was really, to me, kind of a delightful surprise. And I'm curious to know how they managed to grab that character. From Archie. I mean, the character only appeared a few times.
Yeah.
And usually as a psych gag.
Yeah.
You know, but, and I know she was definitely in some Sabrina books.
Maybe they're just challenging him, saying, go ahead, do something.
Yeah. Maybe.
Go ahead, try.
Another thing I read this week was...
you guys said at the beginning of the show you didn't read anything.
Okay, I read one other thing.
Luann.
I did read Luann, but we'll stay away from that because all the... Man, the poop's been coming down on Luann. It's been like... crazy stuff. Like, it's just been all those plot lines that I was like, it's not going anywhere. Now everything's exploding all over the place. I mean, it's, but let's just, I'm not going to talk about it this week. But what I did catch up on is, you guys know, a few years ago, I was really, really crazy about Dick Tracy. And yes. I was Dick Tracy crazy. Well, I kind of got away from it for a while. But I was sitting around, I was bored the other day, so I decided to catch up on 5 months of Dick Tracy, which only took me like an hour and a half. But Dick Tracy's just this week completed a storyline where he's been teaming up with the Spirit. Mm. So they have Will Eisner. So as I think you guys know, Mike Curtis, who writes Dick Tracy, somehow is able to bring in different comic properties into the strip quite often. He strikes these great deals and wins.
Well, I'm sure it's just because other creators have a love of what he's doing.
Yeah. And so he got the rights to do the Spirit for the last 4 months. But it was amazing, and it just wrapped up. So I decided to sit down. I'm learning it just wrapped up. I wanted to read the whole story. It was amazing, some of the characters he brought into the story. So it was the Spirit, Daddy Warbucks from Little Orphan Annie was in the story, and the Dragon Lady from Terry and the Pirates was also part of this huge storyline. And but I think what's really interesting... starting today, Joe Stanton's been drawing Dick Tracy for the last 4 or 5 years. He has now, I don't know if it's permanently or temporary, he's left the strip. And they have a new artist starting today. And it's a woman named Shelley Pelger, who's been inking the strip for the last 4 or 5 years since Curtis and Stanton were doing it. And she's the first woman to work on Dick Tracy ever.
There you go.
And she's a new artist, and I looked at her strip, and it's like without missing a beat, like she's definitely taking Stanton's
Joe Staten.
Staten, is that how you say it? Yeah,
Joe Staten.
Yeah. So I don't know. I they said that he's working on some other projects or something. And he just has to take a hiatus, but I don't know if it's a hiatus or permanently. I'm not sure.
I heard rumors about E-Man.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, welcome back. Welcome, Shelley Pelger, to the world of Dick Tracy. So that was Yeah. If I only do it in about 3 minutes, you guys want to hear what's going on in Luann?
Yeah.
All right, cool. So basically, as you guys may remember...
Unless there's something else. You got veto power here.
No, I'm good.
All right. All right. 3 minutes, seriously.
All right, go
as
ahead.
You guys Luann. May remember...
we need a segment, like theme music for the Luann
segment. Okay. As you guys probably remember, but most likely don't, Les, who's the bully in the strip, has been chasing after Prue, who is a lesbian, but not, he didn't know she was a lesbian. Well, last week, things finally all fell apart, where Prue, he's been running around telling people that he has a girlfriend, but Prue found out, and they squared off over this, which was actually anticlimactic. It just ended up her throwing a drink at him, so it didn't really, but this week, all right, we all remember that whole thing with Bernice and Pyro, right? Marty's nodding his head. Do you actually remember?
Yeah, that was at the restaurant.
No, that was Les and Prue.
I'm more confused than Legion.
Okay, all right. Go ahead. All right, so it's still surrounding that whole weirdo thing with the TV.
I was going to say, that's all I remember is the TV being stolen.
Well, they haven't really kind of got back, but when the TV was originally stolen, we found out that Tiffany and Pyro were hanging out. And Bernice, who's in love with Pyro, is all upset about it. Well, anyways, a few weeks ago, Bernice ran into Pyro in the park and saw, like, this medication in his bag, and it had the doctor's name. So Bernice is kind of getting, like, weird and stalkerish. Well, she ended up looking up the doctor and has five different things that may be wrong with Pyro. So she has now wormed her way into Tiffany's dorm room, and she's basically broken to her phone to get Pyro's phone number, and she's trying to find out what's wrong with Pyro, which is kind of, like, really creepy. And I love Bernice, I really do, but Jesus, girl... Back down. Just get together with Gunther, because that's the guy you should really be with. So anyways, that's it. I told you I would only do it in less than 3 minutes. I timed myself.
Well, you got a few more to do.
Did you watch Riverdale yet?
No.
Riverdale.
No Riverdale. But I will tell you this. That cutie who's playing Cheryl Blossom, I just think is delicious.
No.
She's going to be at the Ottawa Comic Con.
There you go.
Yeah. Which so I'm not going to go to the Ottawa Comic Con, but I was like, I kind of know. I'd love.
Never know, Fan Expo.
She's so cute. She's a cutie, but I don't know how to watch it. I'm not watching it, guys.
All right.
Not even out of some sixth sense of
at all. But
do you not stop at, like, train tracks to watch people get run over and school buses get smashed?
But I will tell you that here in Peterborough, at the end of the month, we will have Everybody Loves Archie, which is the stage show, which I've gone and met the kids, and I've done an article on. They did some cast photos down at the Apollo Grill.
Yeah, I saw that. That was cool.
And I sent them to Dan and Fernando sent a message saying that they look more like the Archie characters than the cast of Riverdale.
Perfect.
Which I said to the director, and she was very excited to hear that. I was going to tell the kids.
Nice.
So
that's awesome.
Yeah, I thought that was and he should know, because he drew the characters for decades. That's what he said. He says that the kid who plays Jughead in this production is... oh, God, he looks so much like Jughead. And Reggie, the Midge, is really good. The girl who's playing Ethel is a little too pretty to be Ethel, but she looks pretty good. They do have Ginger in it, and they gave her the little white extensions, and she's really pretty. So, yeah, well, it's going to be a good play. I also found out that there's another play that's going to be coming to Peterborough about sidekicks. That's going to be an original production at the Theater on King. I don't know a lot about it now. I think it's in June. So when I know more about that, I'll let you know. But I did talk to the writer about the show, and he's actually made, like, the whole thing's based around the... Oh, you know what? We don't have time to get into it.
Right.
We'll talk about another show closer to that production.
Perfect.
I think it's called Sidekicks. But
so that's cool. Another episode of Hey Kids Comics on a lovely Friday afternoon. I guess that's it. Goodbye.
Later.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. I actually got to push buttons.
You have been listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF-FM in Peterborough, Ontario, and available as a downloadable podcast at www.heykidscomics.ca and at www.firstcomicsnews.com. Promotional consideration for the show was provided by no one. Are you kidding me? We couldn't get advertisers if we tried. Wardrobe for our hosts was provided by Joe Nerds in Whitby, Ontario. They don't know that fact, but that is where we get 90% of our clothes from. No animals were harmed in the making of this radio show. Marty tried, but allergies won't let him get too close to Sam's cats. The views and opinions expressed by Sam are solely his own and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the rest of the hosts, as we all like The Walking Dead TV show. The Hey Kids Comics Radio Show is a Quinn Martin production and copyright Hey Kids Comico. Rebroadcasting in part or in whole of this show is forbidden, but really, who would want to anyway?